This evening I want to begin my message by having us think together about life. And specifically, I want to think about how we all have a natural inclination to improve our lot in life. Would you agree with that? We have a natural inclination as people to want to improve our lot in life. I would think that that's pretty much universal, isn't it? And so it really does seem ingrained within each person to do better in life, to advance from a lower position to a higher position, to go from having little in this world to having much in this world, from a worse position to a better position. That's the natural inclination of basically everyone in this world. And we could give any number of examples to illustrate this point of what we're talking about here as far as wanting to take steps up in life. So let's think about the earlier days of our life. And of course, maybe not all of you will identify with this, but I think it's a pretty widespread example here, I think. And if you can't identify with this yourself, you probably know others who can identify with this. So let's think back to the earlier days of our life, and let's talk about transportation. Okay, this area of transportation. So when we were young individuals, just boys and girls, whenever, you know, think about, you know, the kids my kids' age or even a little bit older. So how did you get around whenever you're that young? You usually use your feet to get around, right? But then as we grow a little bit older, how do we get around? Many of us get a bicycle, right? Okay, so do you remember the first bike that you had? And maybe I'm assuming too much here. Maybe not all of us have learned to ride a bike. But I think most of us have learned how to ride a bike. And so we take a step up in the world from walking or running to riding a bike. And you can get around quite a bit easier on a bike than just walking or running, generally speaking, that is. So some of you could maybe tell me about how you used to deliver papers on your bike. Maybe that's not the case so much anymore because hardly anybody gets the paper. But some of Dave, you probably could tell me about delivering papers on your bike, right? And that's a step up definitely from going on foot, right? Okay, so in that case, going on foot is the better option, but you can go quicker anyway with the bike. But do you stay with your bike the rest of your life as far as a means of transportation? The answer is no. Now, as I think about my own younger days, I can't talk about this personally, but whenever I was in school, I had classmates that moved up a step in their life from having a bike to a moped. Okay, whenever you're too young to actually drive a vehicle, that you're too old to want to just stay with the bike, then you move up to that moped stage. And I think about the little town that I grew up in Onslow in eastern Iowa. To the south of town, there was a town called Wyoming, 3 miles away. Now, it would be difficult because of the hills and just the distance to get between Onslow and Wyoming on just a bike, although it was possible, but quite a bit easier if you take your moped. Okay, so that's a step up. Now, those mopeds are nice for a few years, right? But you stick with a moped the rest of your life. The answer is no, you want to move up to the next stage. And what's the next stage? Probably it's going to be a car or a truck, right? Your first vehicle. And so eventually you get old enough where you don't want to be riding that bike or the moped, but your parents or maybe you yourself buy your first car. That's definitely a step above the moped because you're somebody now if you can drive yourself to school or you can drive to work on your own. Now, that first car that you had, maybe not the best car, right? Maybe it's a little bit run down. Maybe it's a beater of sorts. But at least it's a car, right? Now, are you going to stay with that first car? In all likelihood, you're not going to stay with your first car. What are you going to do? You're going to take a step up in life, right? And once you get a better job and you have a bit more money in the bank account, you're going to buy a newer car, probably a used car yet, but a newer car. And then for some, as they do even better in life, they're probably going to get a new car. You know, that's like the step up as far as transportation. So we can identify with that progression in this realm of transportation. Maybe you can't personally identify with this, but you get the idea, don't you? Now, would you agree with me that progress like that is expected and normal? I would say it really is, isn't it? It would be quite strange if we grow up from childhood to adulthood and we never want to move up from bicycle transportation to having a nicer car or truck. You know, that'd be kind of odd, wouldn't it? Now, I'm not saying that you don't enjoy riding your bike, but most people probably don't want to just stick with a bike and that's all they have for transportation. It's a little odd if that's all you want to have for your transportation. Now, there are other areas of life, too, we could illustrate, where you want to move from a harder way of life to an easier way of life. So for those guys, and maybe some of our girls here, too, you like to make things. And so you talk about hand tools, okay? Hand tools are useful, aren't they? But eventually you get to a point in time, especially in our day and age, where you graduate from the hand tools to the power tools, right? Because how much easier is it to saw a board with a chop-off saw as opposed to using a handsaw? It's a lot easier, right? So you take that step up, and then eventually if you really like the power tools or if you have a job with the power tools, you move up to the next tier and you get the really nice power tools. As you think about jobs, it's natural to start off in an entry-level position, but you want to stay in that entry-level position. Probably not. You're probably going to take the promotions given to you. You're going to seek to move up and up and up, higher and higher on that ladder when it comes to your job. You move from the lower positions to the higher positions, from the lower pay to the higher pay. And we could go on and on and on, couldn't we? This is the way things work oftentimes. Our lives are often characterized by taking upward steps. We want to advance higher and higher. We want to do better for ourselves. We want to do better for our families. We want to get nicer things, an easier, a more enjoyable life. Let me ask you a question, though. Is there anything wrong with wanting to do better in life? Is there anything wrong with that? There's nothing wrong with that, per se, is there? Is there anything wrong with wanting to take a step up in the world? There's nothing wrong with that desire, but we have to be very careful that we're taking the right steps up, right? And then we're really taking steps up and we're not taking steps down. So we realize here, let's think about houses. Is a bigger and a nicer house always a better house? It's not always, is it? That bigger and nicer house is not always a step up. Now maybe from the world's perspective you'd say, well, that is a step up. But it's not always a step up. What if we have a bigger house, a nice house, but we don't have the money to pay for the mortgage? Or what if we don't have the time to take care of it? Then is it really a good thing for us? Let's say we have a new car, but what if we're buried in debt because of that new car? Is that necessarily the best thing for us? What if we have a great job with great pay and great benefits, but we're stressed out and we have little time for our family? Is that really a good job? Is that a step up for us in life? And as believers in Jesus Christ, we realize that the best things in life are not always the so-called bigger and better things. More money, more possessions, more prestige, it's not always a step up for us in life. As ones who know Jesus, what do we want to do? What should our desire be? We should have the desire to follow God and His ways. We need to be careful that we aren't allured by the things of the world so much that we aren't loving God as we should. We need to have a love for God that is first and foremost, a commitment to His Word, a seeking and a following of His will. So yes, there are times when a nicer car or a bigger house or another step up in life may be perfectly in line with God's holy will for us as a believer. But there are other times when a step up like that is not really a step up. Because sometimes a step up in the world's eyes is a step down in God's eyes. Now, all of that to introduce our sermon in Judges chapter 18. And as we come back to Judges chapter 18, we realize from the book of Judges in chapter 17 and 18, and especially here verse 18, or chapter 18 focusing in on this chapter, we have a large group of people that takes a step up in the world according to their thinking. Okay, they're believing that they're taking action to improve their lot in life. We find an individual in chapter 18 of Judges that appears from the world's perspective and from his own perspective to be taking a step up in life for himself. But in both cases, what they think is a step up in life is not really a step up in life because spiritually and morally, it's a step in the wrong direction. What they view as progress in life is a direct affront to the declared will of God. Judges chapter 18, if you're using one of our pew Bibles, it's page 299. And this chapter continues the narrative that we saw last time in chapter 17 of the book of Judges. And just to have a brief synopsis of what Judges chapter 17 told us about. In Judges 17, we're introduced to a man named Micah. Micah had stolen a significant amount of money from his mother, and he heard his mother utter a curse concerning whoever had stolen that money. Okay, so there's this curse uttered concerning the stolen money, and Micah then confesses to his mother, "I am the one that stole your money. I took your silver." And Micah's mother, upon hearing Micah's confession, immediately issued a blessing upon her son. She declares that she had dedicated the silver to the Lord. A portion of it would be used to make a graven image and a molten image. And those images, along with an ephod and teraphim, or household idols, were placed in Micah's house, his house of gods, or house of God. And Micah consecrated one of his sons as priest. Now, sometime after that, there was this sojourning Levite, and this Levite comes to Micah's house, and Micah offered this Levite a place to stay, and food, and clothing, and wages, if he would become his priest, his personal priest. And the Levite agreed. The Levite became Micah's spiritual leader. That Levite was virtually adopted into Micah's family. Micah viewed him as one of his sons. And so here's Micah's thought: I have a Levite to my priest. Surely God's blessing will be upon me. The Lord will do good to me. And so it's in this context that we find what we do in verse 1 of Judges chapter 18. In those days, there was no king in Israel, and in those days, the tribe of the Danites sought them an inheritance to dwell in, for unto that day, all their inheritance had not fallen unto them among the tribes of Israel. Just a bit of background concerning that verse. If we went back to the book of Joshua, we read in the first part of Joshua how Joshua leads the people of Israel into the promised land, and there is a successful campaign against a number of major cities and their kings. We read in Joshua that there are 31 kings that are defeated under Joshua's leadership. So in essence, we have the land of Canaan. We could say that the enemy's back was broken with Joshua's military incursion into the land. So many of the major cities had been defeated by Joshua and the Israelites, but there still remained a lot of the other land of Canaan that had to be conquered by the individual tribes of Israel. Now, before Joshua's death, there were lots that were cast so that each tribe knew what portion of the promised land would be theirs as an inheritance. Now, we already know that 2.5 tribes had claimed their territory on the other side of the Jordan. But for the remaining tribes, they had their apportioned lots of land in the promised land on the other side of the Jordan. Now, Dan, the tribe of Dan, was one of those tribes that had an allotted portion of land on this side of the Jordan. And the boundaries of that territory are found in Joshua chapter 19 and verses 40 through 46. We won't go there this evening. But as we read in Joshua 19 and verse 47, and also as we read in the first part of the book of Judges, Dan, the tribe of Dan, failed to take their inheritance. They didn't conquer the land as God had told them to. This is what we read in the first part of Judges. Judges 1, verses 34 and 35. And the Amorites forced the children of Dan into the mountain, for they would not suffer them, wouldn't allow them to come down into the valley. But the Amorites would dwell in Mount Heres and Ajalon and in Shaalbim. Yet the hand of the house of Joseph prevailed so that they became tributaries. It does appear that Dan took certain border towns in its inheritance. At least they partially took them. If not, you know, maybe they basically took possession of them, but there still may have been Canaanites living in those towns. But we have the city of Zorah, as well as the city of Eshtaol, that were cities that they had taken, at least partially so. But Dan couldn't penetrate deeper into the territory, that territory that God gave them, because the Amorites were strong, and the Amorites wouldn't allow them to come down into the valley. So here is the tribe of Dan. They basically have a very small portion of the land that God gave to them. It's theirs for the taking, but they didn't take it. The Amorites were too strong for the tribe of Dan to take the good land of the valley. So here's the tribe of Dan. It's a sizable tribe. It's far too large to live in this very small, just a handful of cities on the border of its inheritance. So what were they to do? The Amorites won't let them take the valley land that God had promised them. They wanted space. They wanted a better way of life. They want to thrive and enjoy this new land. So what are they going to do? Well, the plan that they come up with is found in verse 2. And the children of Dan sent of their family five men from their coasts, men of valor from Zora and from Eshtaol to spy out the land and to search it. And they said unto them, Go, search the land, who when they came to Mount Ephraim, to the house of Micah, they lodged there. Five men of the tribe of Dan, they were sent to spy out the land, to see if they could find a suitable place for them and their families, their flocks, their possessions to call home. Those five men start on their journey, they head north. They pass through the territory of Ephraim, they come to a house of a certain man, and who is that man? It's none other than Micah, the man that we read about in chapter 17. But there's more. Look at verses 3 through 6. When they're by the house of Micah, they knew the voice of the young man, the Levite, and they turned in thither and said unto him, Who brought thee hither, and what makest thou in this place? And what hast thou here? And he said unto them, Thus and thus dealeth Micah with me, and hath hired me, and I am his priest. And they said unto him, Ask counsel, we pray thee, of God, that we may know whither our way which we go shall be prosperous. And the priest said unto him, unto them, Go in peace, before the Lord is your way wherein ye go. Now, I think some of you can identify with this question that I'm going to ask now. Isn't it amazing how you find people that you know, in the strangest and the most unexpected of places? Have you ever had that before? You're in a faraway place, or maybe you're even here in town, but you come across somebody from, you know, somewhere that you'd never expect. You know, somebody that you were not even thinking about coming across, and all of a sudden, you have this meeting, right? Well, it seems that that's what's happening here with these five Danite scouts, or spies. They show up here in the house of Micah. Maybe it's a random house that they stop at. Maybe they need to stop for the night. Maybe it's for some other reason. They didn't expect to find anybody that they knew here, but what do you know? While they're here, they hear a familiar voice. It's the voice of the Levite, Micah's priest. Now, we don't have the background as to how these five Danite spies knew this Levite. Maybe it was when the Levite was sojourning in the south country. But how surprising it was for them, how refreshing it was to find a familiar place while they were on their travels, on their way to scout out the land. And they were very fortunate from their perspective as well, because as they talked with this Levite, they found out that Micah had hired this Levite as his own priest. So here's a spiritual leader, a recognized spiritual leader. So here's the perfect man that could give these five men a word from God about their mission. Is it going to be a successful mission? Is it not going to be a successful mission? Is God's blessing upon it or not? So here's the Levite. He's glad to respond to their request. He tells them, Go in peace. The Lord is before you in the way that you go. Now you could take that from any number of, at least you can view it positively or negatively, but I think that the Levite here was intending a positive message. The Lord is before you for good. So go on your way. The Lord's blessing be upon you. How encouraged those five men must have been as they soon set off on their way. And for a number of days, maybe even weeks, they continue to go northward, and finally they come to a place that seems to be the perfect fit for them and their families. We read in verse 7, Then the five men departed and came to Laish, and saw the people that were therein, how they dwelt careless after the manner of the Zidonians, quiet and secure. There was no magistrate in the land that might put them to shame in anything. And they were far from the Zidonians and had no business with any man. Here's the city of Laish. And I should have put a map up. I'm sorry about that. But we have Laish. Imagine with me the city, the Sea of Galilee. It's about 30 miles to the north of the Sea of Galilee. It's about 30 miles to the southeast of Sidon. And there's a bit of debate whether the city of Laish was inside the territory that God gave Israel, or whether it's just outside that territory that God gave to Israel. We'll talk about that in just a little while. But what the verse makes very clear is that the city of Laish, was very attractive to these five spies, these five men from Dan, a very promising prospect for their people as they sought a place to call home. Our verse says that the people were careless. And again, that word careless can be viewed from a couple different ways. Were these people carefree? Were they thinking, no one will attack us, and so they have no defensive protections like walls or gates around their city? Or were they carefree because they had great defenses, like very large walls and gates, and confident that no one would dare attack them because they have a strong position? Either way, that they're not concerned about invasions. The text goes on to say that these ones lived after the manner of the Sidonians. It says that they were far from the Sidonians. They didn't have any dealings with anyone. They didn't have an alliance with the Sidonians, but it does seem that they lived like the Sidonians. They probably spent their time trading goods with other people. They were quiet. They were secure. Some would say that they're unsuspecting. And it appeared that they had all that they needed. They had material wealth. So who else was living like these ones here? And the five Danites, probably as they watched the people of Laish here, they considered the city. They saw a perfect opportunity. This was the place for their tribe. Finally, a place they could call home. And so their mission accomplished. They found a good place. They made their trek back to their people. They gave a report, as we read in verses 8 and following. And they came unto their brethren, to Zorah and Eshtael. And their brethren said unto them, "What say ye?" And they said, "Arise, that we may go up against them, for ye have seen the land, and behold, it is very good. And are ye still? Be not slothful to go, and to enter to possess the land. When ye go, ye shall come unto a people secure, into a large land, for God hath given it into your hands, a place where there is no want of anything that is in the earth." These five men were very excited about what they had found. They were sure that they could take the land for themselves, they and their fellow Danites. And so these five did all that they could to convince their fellow Danites to go and claim this land as their own. So Zorah, Eshtael, where they're currently staying, it wasn't ideal by any means. This land was not very good that they were staying at currently. But what they had spied out was very good. They had everything they're looking for. And so the five say to their fellow Danites, "We need to get up. We need to go up against this people. Don't be lazy. Don't make excuses. This is a wide open land. The people here can be defeated easily." And what's more, these five Danites say, "God has given it into our hands." So that's an encouraging word. Who wouldn't want to go up and take the land? And so we read in verses 11 and 12, "And there went out from thence of the family of the Danites, out of Zorah and out of Eshtael, 600 men appointed with weapons of war, and they went up and pitched in Kirjath-Jearim in Judah. Wherefore they called that place Mahanadon unto this day. Behold, it is behind Kirjath-Jearim." 600 men of the Danites respond to the call of the five. They take up arms, and they're going to take the good land that was reported to them. These 600 men took along with them their wives, their children, their flocks, their herds, all that they owned, as far as what they could move anyway. And they're making a definitive move. They're leaving where they're currently at, Zorah and Eshtael. They're embarking on a new life. So we have how many people here from Dan? We have 600 men that are armed with their weapons of war. We wonder, at least I wonder, how many Danites stayed behind. Because keep in mind, this is the whole tribe of Israel. And we could go back to the book of Joshua probably, or even further back, and we could see how many men were recorded as far as in the tribe of Dan, and it would be far more than 600. In a way, 600 is a lot of people, but in another way, 600 isn't all that many at all. But there is nothing that is said here in the text as far as how many may have stayed behind or whatever happened to them. Our focus is on those Danites that are moving north to claim territory that they think is better for them. So as they move north, now these 600, with their weapons and their families, they spend the night in the territory of Judah. They set up camp outside of Kirjath-Jearim, and it must have been quite the spectacle. Think about the people of Judah watching this rather large group of people spending the night here, and it must have impressed them, because what did they do? They named that place Mahanadan, or the Camp of Dan. And so from the territory of Judah, they move on to the region of the Ephraimites, verse 13, and they passed thence unto Mount Ephraim and came unto the house of Micah. Now before it was the five spies, the five Danites who stayed at the house of Micah. Now we have the whole company of the Danites staying at that house of the house of Micah. At least they're pausing here. They're not staying there overnight, it doesn't appear. But they're spending a little while here. Now, in some ways, it might seem odd. Well, why are they coming back to the house of Micah? Well, it makes sense that they retraced the route that the five originally took. So that makes sense. But there's another reason, too, why they're stopping here at the house of Micah. as we find in verses 14 and following. Then answered the five men that went to spy out the country of Laish, and said unto their brethren, Do ye know that there is in these houses an ephod, and teraphim, and a graven image, and a molten image? Now therefore consider what ye have to do. And they turned thitherward and came to the house of the young man, the Levite, even unto the house of Micah, and saluted him. And the 600 men appointed with their weapons of war, which were of the children of Dan, stood by the entering of the gate. And the five men that went to spy out the land went up, and came in thither, and took the graven image, and the ephod, and the teraphim, and the molten image. And the priest stood in the entering of the gate with the 600 men that were appointed with weapons of war. Now think about the first trip of the five to Micah's house. They stop at Micah's house. They unexpectedly cross paths with the Levite. It's here at Micah's house that the men requested of the Levite a word from the Lord, a word from God, and the Levite gives the blessing. And nothing in that earlier context talks about the Danites noticing the graven image, the molten image, the ephod, the teraphim, but that they did notice it on their first trip is made clear by what they are talking about here now on the second trip, when the whole company of the Danites come. So they ask a question, do you realize that here in this house are these objects used in worship, these idols? But from their perspective, they're gods. And so upon asking that question, we have the five spies going into the house. They greet the Levites. They take all these items of worship for themselves. And all the while, we have the 600 armed men standing at the gate. And the narrative continues in verse 18, And these went into Micah's house and fetched the carved image, the ephod, and the teraphim, and the molten image. Then said the priest unto them, What do ye? What are you doing? Now keep in mind, for some time the Levite had been serving Micah as his personal priest. They had a rather close relationship. Micah was a spiritual father, or the Levite was a spiritual father to Micah. Micah had basically adopted the Levite into his family. So you see that there's probably quite a close relationship here. It seemed that both were content, both were rather happy with their situation. And imagine how disturbed that Levite would have been when he saw the five spies taken one by one. First of all, well, whichever is first, but we have the molten image they're taking, the graven image, the teraphim one by one, or all together. We have the ephod. And all of these items were vital objects of worship that the Levite used. And now they're all being stolen. They're being taken away from him. And so the Levite asks them, of course, what are you doing? And the response in verse 19, And they said unto him, Hold thy peace, lay thine hand upon thy mouth, and go with us, and be to us a father and a priest. Is it better for thee to be a priest unto the house of one man, or that thou be a priest unto a tribe and a family in Israel? The Danites were intent on stealing the idols, the ephod. Nothing that the Levite would say would dissuade them from their purpose here. The Danites told them, be quiet. Told the Levite to be quiet. The Danites told the Levite here, join our cause. So don't cause a stir. Don't cause any problem here, any trouble. Don't have a commotion here as far as what we're doing. Come with us, rather. You can be our father. You can be our priest. You can lead a whole tribe in spiritual matters. And in essence, the Danites were saying, wouldn't it be much better for you if you served a tribe instead of one man? Just think of what a step up that would be in your life. Well, how would the Levite respond? Keep in mind, the Levites were to be the spiritual leaders in Israel. But this Levite was far from a spiritual leader in the right sense. And the priest's heart was glad, and he took the ephod and the teraphim and the graven image and went in the midst of the people. So what the Danites offer, be our priest, the priest of a whole tribe. What did the Levite do? Immediately, he grabbed all of these religious paraphernalia, if you want to call that, the ephod, the teraphim, the graven image. The priest was glad to take them and go with them. He joined their cause wholeheartedly. He was glad. So where was his loyalty found? It was, in essence, the one who gave him the best offer. Apparently, he thought little now of Micah and his family. And so now they are continuing their northward journey toward Laish, verse 21. So they turned and departed and put the little ones and the cattle and the carriage before them. And then we read verse 22. But when they were a good way from the house of Micah, the men that were in the houses near to Micah's house were gathered together and overtook the children of Dan. And they cried unto the children of Dan, and they turned their faces and said unto Micah, What aileth thee? that thou comest with such a company? And he said, ye have taken away my gods which I made, and the priests, and are ye gone away, and what have I more? And what is this that ye say unto me? What aileth thee? And the children of Dan said unto him, let not thy voice be heard among us, lest angry fellows run upon thee, and thou lose thy life and the lives of thy household. And the children of Dan went their way. When Micah saw that they were too strong for him, he turned and went back unto his house. Now apparently Micah was unaware of what happened initially when the Danites came and stole all of his idols and ephod, and the Levite left holding all these things. How much time passed until Micah discovered this, we don't know for sure. But when he did discover that his things had been stolen, what does he do? He gathers up a group of men and he pursues after the Danites. And when he catches up with them, what do the Danites do? They confront Micah and his people. And the Danites ask, well, what's your problem? Why are you following us with such a big group of people here? And Micah responds, probably quite exasperated, you've taken my gods that I have made. You've taken away my priest. And what more do I have? How could you possibly ask me what my problem is? And Micah was devastated. But the Danites would have none of it. They threatened him. They warned him, back off. You better be quiet, otherwise there will be some angry people that will come out against you, and both you and your family would die. And then with that, the Danites continue on their northward journey. And Micah realizes he's far outnumbered. There's no way he could take on the Danites. And so he turns away and goes back home dejectedly. Now, this is the last that we hear of Micah now. The Danites continue northward. They have their spoil from Micah's house. They have the idols, the ephod, Micah's former priest. And as we read in verses 27 through 30, and they took the things which Micah had made and the priest which he had, and came unto Laish, unto a people that were at quiet and secure. And they smote them with the edge of the sword and burnt the city with fire. And there was no deliverer because it was far from Zidon. And they had no business with any man. And it was in the valley that lieth by Beth-Rehob. And they built a city and dwelt therein. And they called the name of the city Dan after the name of the city, after the name of Dan, their father, who was born unto Israel. Howbeit, the name of the city was Laish at the first. And the children of Dan set up the graven image, and Jonathan, the son of Gershom, the son of Manasseh, he and his sons were priests to the tribe of Dan until the day of the captivity of the land. And they set them up Micah's graven image, which he made, all the time that the house of God was in Shiloh. The Danite army eventually reaches Laish. Seems that they easily conquered it. Nothing to say of any resistance against the Danites. No one came to the aid of the people of Laish. It appears as if every person in the city of Laish is killed. The city itself is burned to the ground. And upon the ashes of Laish, the Danites build their own city. They give it a name. They call it Dan, after their ancestor, Dan, the son of Israel. And there, in their new city, they set up their graven image that they took from Micah's house. The Levite served them as their priest. And as we have the end of the chapter, we finally learn the name of this Levite. His name was Jonathan, the son of Gershom, the son of Manasseh. And if you'd study out the Hebrew text here, that name Manasseh very well may have originally been Moses. And scribes, because they didn't want Moses associated with such a terrible thing, it appears added a nun, a letter in, to make it Manasseh instead of Moses. But it's in this line of Jonathan, his sons, both he beginning this, but then his sons, that would serve as priests to the tribe of Dan until Dan itself would be conquered by the Assyrians. Micah's idol that was taken from his house, that was set up as a thing of worship all the time that the house of God was in Shiloh. Now, there's so much more that could be said about this chapter. But let's first of all look at what's recorded in this chapter from the perspective of the people of Dan. The people of Dan were given an allotted territory. They had a promised inheritance, but they were unable to take that promised inheritance. Why? Because the Amorites were too strong for them. They were confined to a very small portion of the land that God had given them. So from the Danites' perspective, they're not living in an ideal situation. This is not what they wanted for their families. So what do? They send out spies to find a better land, a better home for their families. And they find what they think is a better land in the far north. They thought, this is the perfect place for us. It's easily conquered. It's a very good land. It's all we could ask for. And they took it. You know, so the people of Laish were far different than the Amorites, who wouldn't let them settle down in the valley in their inherited land. So they take the land of Laish. Surely they're thinking, God's hand is upon us. God has been so good to us. From the Danites' perspective, what had they done? They had taken a step up in life, hadn't they? Life was so much better for them. So that was their perspective. We've taken a step up in life. What was God's perspective? They've taken a step down in life, haven't they? God had already given them some good land, but they didn't act by faith to take the land. They could have conquered the Amorites if they would have went out in faith to take the land. Yes, they had taken at least partially Zorah and Eshtael, two of the cities, but there were far more cities than that that had been given to them originally. There was very much good land for them and their families. Yes, the Amorites were strong, but God would have given them the victory if they would have acted by faith. But the Danites didn't have faith in the true and the living God. They went north instead. They took land that was not given to them by God. So either it was completely outside the territory that God gave the Israelites, or if it was just on the border of the land given to the Israelites, it wasn't given to the people of Dan, it would have been given to the people of Naphtali. Okay, so either way, they're not taking land God gave them. They destroyed the people of the city. They burned the city to ashes, the city of Laish. In doing that, they weren't obeying God, because that city was not for them to conquer. It was not for them to claim as their own. So the Danites, after all of this happened, they probably thought, well, we have done well for ourselves. We've taken a step up in life, but in reality, it was a step downward. They disobeyed God. And what's more, as we see very clearly in this passage, what did they do on the way? They stopped at Micah's house. What did they steal? They stole Micah's idols, Micah's ephod. They recruited for themselves Micah's priest. And their thought, this is good for us. But what did they do first of all, thievery is wrong, but they were forsaking the worship of God. They devoted themselves to the worship of idols. Jonathan, who's the Levite, was not qualified to be a priest to begin with, so they are forsaking God's will in so many different ways. The people of the tribe of Dan thought they were doing better in life, but in reality they were doing much worse off in life because they had forsaken God's will. Let's consider now Jonathan the Levite. Here's a man that was seeking to improve his lot in life. Going back to chapter 17, he traveled from Bethlehem to the land of Ephraim. He's trying to find something better for himself. He came across Micah. Micah offered him a place to stay. He offered him a position and wages and clothing, all of these things. And the Levite took Micah's offer up. What a step up in life for him. He's not wandering around anymore. He has a position probably for a wealthy man here. He just took a step up in life. But then what happens? The Danites come. And the Danites are stealing the idols and all of these things, but the Danites give him an offer that he cannot refuse. It's a step up in his perspective. Instead of being a priest for one man and his family, he's a priest for an entire tribe of Israel. From Jonathan's perspective, this is a step up. You know, how much better in life could I be doing than this? Jonathan thinks, I'm taking a step up in life, but what about in God's eyes? It's a step much lower. The Levite abandoned his God-given duties. This Levite was not content to doing what God called him to do. Jonathan should have been helping the God-ordained priests, but instead he took upon himself a position that was not given to him. He wasn't qualified by God to be a priest. But Jonathan did what he thought was best. So he gladly became Micah's priest. He gladly became Dan's priest. And then his son, his grandson after him, all down the line, thinking, yes, we're doing well in life. But they were not doing what God wanted. A very sad and tragic account in chapter 17 and 18 of Judges. Here is an account of men doing what is right in their own eyes. They forsook what was right in God's eyes. These men are doing what they can to improve their lot in life. From the outward appearance, they're doing just that, but they were not doing things God's way. They were making things worse for themselves in reality. But little did they realize how bad they were and how sinful their actions were. How about us today? As we think about ourselves and our families and our friends, we have admitted already it is our natural tendency to improve our lot in life. That's not a bad thing in and of itself. We want to do better in life. We don't want to be lazy. We want to provide more for ourselves and for our families. And you know, that's our natural inclination. But as we strive to improve our lot in life, we have to be absolutely sure that we're doing things God's way. We're obeying Him. We're loving Him. We're following His leading. We must make sure our priorities are straight. We must not embrace the world's philosophy of moving up in life, a philosophy that may very well contradict God's holy will and His holy ways. We have Dan, we have Jonathan. From their perspective, God was blessing them. God was doing good for them. Things were working out well for them. You know, how successful the Danites were. They conquered the city. They named the city after themselves. What success Jonathan had. How good things turned out for him. But that doesn't mean that God was blessing them. Success doesn't always mean that you're doing what's right. Success may mean that you're straying far from God. At least success from the world's perspective. So we need to be discerning, don't we? We need to be so discerning as believers. We want to have God give us His wisdom. It should be our desire that we love the things that God loves and obey God without question. Yes, we want to improve in life, but as we seek to improve in life, may we never love money more than God. May we never want nice things more than we want heavenly treasures. We can learn so much from Judges chapter 17 and 18. May we learn from the mistakes of the tribe of Dan, learn from the mistakes of this Levite, Jonathan. May we be committed this evening and for the rest of our lives to do what's right in God's eyes, and not do what's right in our own eyes. May we seek God's face in all that we do. We want to take steps in this life that promotes God's kingdom, that gives God glory. May God help us with these things. Heavenly Father, we thank You for what You've shown us here in the book of Judges, a time period, a very dark time period in Israel's history when every man did what was right in his own eyes. We see the tribe of Dan, we see Jonathan the Levite doing what was right in their own eyes, taking steps up in life according to their perspective, but yet how far away from You they were. So I pray that we would be very discerning as we seek to improve our lot in life. May we never improve our lot in life in such a way that we do go against Your holy will. So help us to improve our lot in life in accordance with Your will. And help us to realize that bigger is not always better. More money is not always better. Help us to always be seeking Your will, loving You and obeying You without question. Again, we thank You for Your word. We pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen.